Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Coach Chat Radio. I am Laurie Lawson, and my fantastic co-host is the amazing...
I'm blushing. Bernie Sigel here, calling in from Fort Lauderdale.
And he tells me it's very sunny. We're not going to hold that against him, though. It's like, have a good time while you can. Let me tell you a little bit about Coach Chat. We at Coach Chat think if you change your perspective, you can change your whole life. We developed this show for coaches and those interested in one of the fastest-growing professions in the world today. Coach Chat will hook you up with some of the world's leading coaches who share their expertise and give you tips and takeaways for expanding and improving your life and your business. And we have a special treat today, Tony Cortese. Tony, welcome to Coach Chat.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
We are thrilled to have you. Let me tell you a little bit about Tony. She's an executive leadership coach who has hundreds of hours of experience coaching emerging leaders and C-suite professionals. We're going to ask her all about that. But let me also tell you, this lady was on the ball way before it was stylish. She's an ardent supporter of diversity, and she's a founding member of three diversity networks at Barclays, including Women in Technology. She's received several awards, including the prestigious Woman of the Year Award for Barclays Group. Because of her diversity efforts, Tony was invited to ring the opening and closing bells at the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ. We are so impressed. Tony has partnered with the YWCA for over 17 years in varying roles, supporting young and underprivileged women. She was inducted into the YWCA's Academy of Women Leaders in 2013 and has been asked to be on their board of directors. So we are thrilled to have you here today, Tony. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor, really, to be selected to come talk with you guys and spend some time. Wow.
So Tony, a lot of our listeners would like to know a little bit about our guest's journey to where they are today, because most people started off doing something totally different than coaching and ended up where they are. So tell us a little bit about your journey and how you ended up doing this.
Yeah, I was in the opposite direction from coaching, actually. I spent 25 years on Wall Street. 18 years of them were in technology. I had lots of really fun jobs managing small and large teams globally and regionally. And then about seven years before I left, I actually moved into the corporate strategy department. And I found myself continuously drawn to people projects. And one of the projects in particular was a result of the credit crisis. Specifically, regulators wanted us to find a way to get employees to speak up and if they see something, you know, go wrong. So we did the stuff everybody other banks were doing, like beefing up the whistleblowing program. But a colleague and I found this to be troublesome because it's like, you know, if there's no one in the company that our employees can come talk to, that they're going outside to a whistleblowing company, we're failing miserably, right? There's no one they can trust. So we created this innovative program to build trust. It was widely successful. There were 17 appointed senior people in the company that anyone can come talk to, and it remained confidential. We were like, well, build it. Let's see if anybody comes, and they did. And I started off doing this off the side of my desk, and about 6 months later, it became my full-time job because so many people were coming to talk to me. So, people were coming to talk to us about, you know, like bureaucracy busting stuff, right? But most people were coming to us with people problems. I had a problem with my manager, my coworker, my stakeholder, and I don't find meaning in my work, all this stuff we hear in coaching, right? And because I had such an incredible experience being coached by, a little shout out here to Bernie, you mentioned how amazing he is, and I can speak to that seriously. I mean, it was a game changer. You know, you mentioned earlier about changing perspectives, And he did. I mean, in almost two sessions, it completely changed the way I looked at certain situations. It was a game changer for me. I bought some coaching books, and I started using some of the techniques on the people that came to talk to me. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is magic. This is my lane. This is my lane. So, I took the leap of faith, and I started my own coaching company. Yeah.
That's a great story, and I love that Bernie's a part of it. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I know in 2008, when everything sort of went bust, I ended up coaching several people who were in banking institutions because those were, you know, definitely. And I found that there were unique challenges to people in the banking industry because they're numbers people and they didn't know how to adapt their skills to other things. What challenges did you find? I mean, certainly I know the regular ones where I hate my manager. No, I don't like my manager. Right? I'm having trouble.
My big challenge. I'm sorry?
No, I just said, what were the special things for banking?
For our bank, I worked for Barclays, and we acquired the giant Lehman Brothers, right? So for us, the big issue was around the integration. And I'm talking about integration that's not like, 6 months or 2 years long. I'm talking that, I mean, I had to do in 6 days what would have taken us a good 9 months. Bring on all these people on a platform. But on top of that, a lot of Barclays people were being let go because, you're bringing, our account was PIMCO, and then, Lehman also has PIMCO's account, but guess who has the bigger, the bigger book with Lehman, right? So the Barclays people were being let go left, right, and center, and sitting, the first few days after the acquisition, really felt like being in the morgue. I mean, it was dead quiet. There was no trading going on. And people were just walking out crying and being let go. It was a really, really scary thing.
Wow. Well, those were the days.
And that's why I hired Bernie.
I wish I could bottle whatever I did. Whatever I did to you.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I don't know. But Tony, you were in the technology area, and I don't want to just label you that. It's just a technologist.
Yeah.
You said it's not there for anybody. But I've worked with just over the years a couple of technology people. And in general, and I know it's anecdotal, some of them don't have the emotional intelligence, the people skills that some other people have. And so I was kind of wondering, because you have this background, how has it, helped you with clients or people that come to you, having been in the technology arena?
Yeah, it's interesting. Managing technologists is actually kind of tough for me. I'm actually not technical. And for any technologist, well, I shouldn't say every or any, for most technologists, being rational and being technical is paramount, right? Even at Google, I've done work at Google, and people at Google, technologists, to manage people is like, is a step down, right? Nobody wants to manage people. They just want to be techie. But I got leadership roles because I was unlike them and like them. So unlike them because, I had good communication skills, good relational skills. I was able to bridge the business and technology really well. But it was a real stretch to gain their trust, and I had to do that over and over again. And as a result, I got to really understand how they think, how they work very systematically. But more importantly, I really know how they feel, right? I don't know if you ever read Susan Cain's book, Quiet, but to me, that was amazing. It was really enlightening for me. Susan Cain describes introversion and extroversion in a really interesting way. She says it has nothing to do with your social skill set, right? So anyone who talks to me would say, oh, Tony, you're totally an extrovert. But I'm not. I'm actually something called an ambivert. I'm in between. I grew up in a large, loud Italian family, and I was the kid, the weird kid who'd be like hiding in a closet with a flashlight reading a book, you know, just like I needed quiet space, right? The way Susan Cain defines it, she says introversion, extroversion depends upon how you re-energize. So, you know, for me, I love to go to a party. I have a great time at a party, but I'm one of the first people to leave. Like, I need to retreat and recharge in quiet. So the people that worked for me, we had that in common, you know, very introverted. And so I really know how they feel. I know their fear of speaking up, for example, in a meeting is really, really hard. You know, so I've worked most of my life to overcome some of that stuff or manage it, right? So I think I'm well-placed to help technologists or any analytical professional, right? Traders are very similar, and accountants, risk modelers, researchers, right?
Well, you've had plenty of experience doing this, and I'm just wondering, I'm sure you can't answer this question, but it's something we could philosophically talk about. How much tech is too much? But in along those lines, because it never seems to decrease, we become more and more dependent. What changes have you made from when you first started to just this overall umbrella of tech control over our lives, you know, blessedly sometimes and sometimes cursedly? But what changes have you had to make as technology just takes over and over and over?
In terms of coaching?
Mm-hmm.
Or in any?
Coaching, yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I just sometimes just think in terms of pandemic, just to kind of take that question and make it a little, like, narrower. For coaching, I think it's not so hard to switch to Zoom, obviously, right? But in technologists, this is paradise for them, right? Being able to work from home and not have too much interaction with people. Except the flip side of that is certainly at the beginning of the pandemic, my clients, technology clients, would be saying, "Oh my God, every night I have to have cocktails with my team. There's team building events like every twice a week, and they were completely maxed out on that stuff." But you know, but to your point, I think one of the things that really it's really interesting how technology is really evolving, right? I mean, you guys would understand, like, remember when technology just supported businesses, right? You know, they supported, you know, communications and you know, help stream efficiencies in business. But now, you know, technology, you know, most businesses will be, if they not already are, technology businesses, right? Goldman Sachs rebranded themselves as a technology company many years ago. So did Visa. Technology totally drives businesses now, right? It's a massive change from certainly when I started working.
I still remember the first cell phone. It was bigger than bigger than Frieda, who the CEO, bigger than her head. And just to lock it up because she didn't want anyone to touch her cell phone. I'm thinking about how technology, there's a lot of positives, but then there's some negatives. I find over the last 2 years that some clients are just so addicted to the technology, especially their cell phones, that it's hard to even coach some people because they're so distracted that they're not focused. And I don't, what are you finding?
Yeah. You know, what I find most disturbing is, so yes to all that, Bernie, but it's the danger of not being held accountable for your actions, the ability to hide, decreasing human decency, right? So there's this book I read a long time ago called Traffic, and I read that when tinted windows came out in cars, the number of aggressive traffic incidents, like cutting people off, increased, and of course, deaths increased. And but that's like trolling, right? And by the way, that was because you can't see me, what I'm doing. You can't see my face, and so I can get away with stuff, right? And we're seeing that now, like, a lot more with, like, trolling. You know, you don't know who I am. You can't see me, so I don't have to be held accountable for my, you know, there'll be no repercussions for me. To me, that's madly dangerous.
And we had the President of the United States, a little political, being able to say whatever he wanted to say, and then millions of people following it. And I completely hear you. It's just like people will say things in social media that they would never say to your face.
Exactly.
But interesting point. I mean, misinformation is definitely is Wikipedia still where you can just go ahead and change it if you don't like what it says? Something that was always the complaint about Wikipedia. It's just all kinds of misinformation out there. In addition to that, isolation. I'm finding that especially with pandemic, when everybody's working from home and staring at their computer screens, that communication skills are being not used, and if they're being used, they're creating miscommunication. Did you find that in your arena? And if you did, how did you work with that?
Sorry, I'm just thinking this through in my head, obviously. I think Zoom is just enough for me. It's absolutely not better, a million times not as good as meeting people in person, which I miss deeply. But I find that, you know, after being with my clients via Zoom, I feel like I have enough of a connection, you know. It's been okay for me. I much prefer picking up a phone and calling somebody. I think typing up emails or, you know, my clients use Slack, this other application called Slack. I don't know if you know it. It's like text messaging, except just a little more robust than that. But, you know, now there's like three channels. You can call, you can Slack, you got to check your text messages, you got to check your emails. It's like, what? You know, it's too much. My clients, I have two clients, non-technology clients, that are okay with, you know, just picking up the phone and calling. But most of them are all via email and texting. Preferred.
I was in general, we'll say the clients were having issues with people. The gold standard is meeting them face-to-face. Then you have the phone, or you have Zoom or Skype, or Skype seems to age me. I have young people that don't even know what it is. So those things,
true.
So that's the gold standard. The worst thing you can do is the texting and the emails, because people tend to read things into them that, you know, the sender doesn't even mean most of the time. So it's really tough for people. I kind of enjoy that. Like you said, I'm fine with the one-on-one. It's typically a Skype or a FaceTime, but I am really annoyed with the Zoom, with these big meetings where I have to look at a dozen, two dozen or more faces and people doing all kinds of things while someone's speaking. And I find it distracting and annoying, and often I don't show my face, by the way. And then the last one I did, I just hung up in the middle of the call because I couldn't take it anymore. Are your clients or any of the clients have issues with this stuff that's going on?
Is that for me or is that for Lori?
For you. Not between you and them in the coaching relationship, but just that it's just maybe becoming just annoying, overwhelming, or whatever it is.
I'm okay with Zoom. I do a lot of webinars, I take a lot of webinars, and I like the kind of breakout room concept. I don't know. There's something about that. I've made some interesting relationships through that. What I have a pet peeve around is texting and the emojis. I can't stand them. I'm like, you know, first of all, people, they exist because texting alone is not enough. You need to tell people how you feel about it, right? Something's lost in the translation. So they create these emojis. And there's like 5,000 smiley faces ones. I don't know which one to put. There's a blue heart, there's a red heart, there's a pink heart. I'm just putting a red heart every time. Let them read into it whatever they want to. But that's too much for me. I can't stand the emoji thing, personally.
I agree.
It's a challenge, and Zoom has become what drives me crazy is you're on Zoom, and then people are chatting on Zoom. There's supposed to be a speaker, and I don't know what happened to him. And then we all break out into rooms, and you don't really get to hear the speaker. It's like, okay, you have to be flexible and adapt, I guess, at this point in time.
You know what I'm enjoying, actually? I'm going a little off topic here, but if it's okay. My partner and I, we've been on 5 o'clock on Friday nights. There's something called Cocktails with a Curator at the Frick, the Frick Gallery does it. And
oh, I love
it. I've got to tell you, I'm learning a ton about art and sipping a cocktail. It's just so that like there's some interesting things that have come out of this that you know. I've maintained connections with people way more than I thought I would, and talking to some people more than I would have if I were busy all day, for example. You know, my normal day commuting.
Yeah, I've made some great connections in Zoom rooms for sure. So that is a benefit. But let me ask you about a little bit about the diversity work that you do. You've been doing this for a long time, and like I said before, it was stylish. What got you into that?
I didn't have, I grew up in a first generation Italian home, immigrant Italian home. I'm first generation. And, while my parents were okay for me to go to college, they're talking about a 2-year local associate degree, right? So I can become a secretary. I grew up in a neighborhood, I'm the only one that went to college. I didn't know anyone that went to college in my neighborhood, women. So I didn't have any role models around me. I think certainly at the beginning of my career, I aimed low. You know who my role model was? I owe a lot to Mary Tyler Moore. I mean, I know I'm dating myself here too.
We
but
all do.
Mary Tyler Moore,
we
right?
All love this show.
She was she was a single woman. She didn't have to be married. Yep. She worked in an office with a meaningful job, and she had awesome clothes. You know, I mean, like what was not to love about Mary Tyler Moore? she was my role model. I mean, honestly. So anyway, once I started working and quote unquote had some success, however you define that, a lot of young women would come talk to me and want to be mentored, and it was such a joy for me, such a joy to do that. So I was part of the one of the founding members the Women's Network at Barclays, and then I started with some other people. Women in Technology. So it was very much based on gender. And then I started a Parent Family Network as well, and all those are booming still at Barclays. And when my son came out to me, I think he was 15 or 16. There's a Bernie story in there too, which we won't get into. But I joined our LGBTQ network and worked closely with them so I could really learn best how to support my son. So, yeah.
Wow. On that note, actually, just thinking about it, have you had any exposure, because you are involved with LGBT, with people that are working, afraid to come out, that type of thing?
No, I really haven't.
Okay.
How about What about the Me Too movement? I have mixed feelings on that, truthfully.
Oh, my goodness. Me too.
I know.
No pun intended there.
No. But it's like, okay, and what about the inequity, I guess, in investment banking and technology for females? What are some of the things you did to overcome that?
Look, you know, on the one hand, we've come massively far, right? I mean, when I started working on Wall Street, I mean, everything you saw in the movies, you see in the movies, was true. You know, my ass would get slapped plenty of times, or, you know, and I'm from Brooklyn. I never took that from anybody. But, you know, it was, you know, strippers on Friday. Brokers would always send over strippers, you know, dressed as nurses or dressed as this or that. I mean, it was just commonplace, right? Most men had Playboy calendars on their desk. I mean, I remember when we brought internet into the company, and, you know, the head of one of the desks called me over and said, "Tony, it was around Christmas time, I need to buy my wife something for Christmas. Can I buy it on this computer?" And then, you know, there were no blockers or anything. And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, how do you get to Victoria's Secret?" You know, I mean, like, that was just normal. It was normal. And it, you know, so look, it's not that way anymore, right? But it's maybe what's harder now is the unconscious bias that exists. And I think, that's a much, 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 much trickier thing, right? And to go a little deeper into the Me Too, right? I mean, I had two instances where, you know, a boss pinned me against the wall and, you know, tried to do other things. And it's, you know, it's real. It is real. But, you know, what's happened is, A, there's a number of, you know, people who have kind of muddied the waters. And it kind of works against us too, right? Because I think about the senior men that I knew, that I know, who say they're afraid to, like, just grab a cot. Well, although now with sometimes pandemic, but before pandemic, like, I want, you know, just like I'd on my way out to grab a coffee, I'd grab one of the young men from the desks or young women from the desk. Let's go grab a coffee. You know, it's a great time to bond. He's like, I'm afraid to do. They're afraid to do that anymore. Right, they won't do it with women alone anymore. They'll always have to bring two people. So, you know, it works against us some ways too there. But, you know, as they say, you know, the pendulum has to swing to the other extreme before you find some balance, right?
It makes perfect sense. A friend of mine's been at Goldman for 20 years, and we had lunch a few weeks ago. Actually, it's a few months ago. And he said to me, "Well, it's very quiet in the office. People are afraid to say anything." And
yeah.
I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because they're afraid of saying something wrong, and it'd be held against them." And I felt like I said, I made the same comment about the pendulum. It's going to swing one to the other, and there'll be some backlash. But at the end of the day, I mean, personally, I was on Wall Street for 35 years. I was, like, oblivious, and maybe it's because the firms I worked for weren't that way. But hearing these stories from not just women, but all types of minorities, it's, you know, pretty horrifying. And I'm so glad that it's swinging. Let it go a little bit, maybe too far, because it's just wasn't right how people were being treated.
Yeah. But the unconscious bias is the really, I think, you know, that's a hard one to solve.
It is. Also with racism, you know, but awareness. And I think that's why coaches are out there, you know, to bring you to awareness, to, you know, so I'm thrilled that you're out there working on the same thing that we all care about. You have been a delight to talk to, Tony. How can people find you?
Thank you. Yeah, so they can go to my website at www.force9coaching.com.
Okay.
So, thank you. Or they can email me at tony@force9coaching.com.
Okay, force9 with the number, coaching.com. Thank you so much for being You're such a great guest, Bernie. Enjoy the last day of your vacation. We'll see you soon. And everybody out there, we'll see you in May. Take care, everybody.
Thank you both.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Sure, bye-bye.